Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Sweet Discussions on Blog Talk Radio. This is Sweepy. I am welcoming everybody that listens to Blog Talk Radio to Sweet Discussions. Blog Talk Radio is a part of All Poetry, one of the world's largest poetry sites. And inside that site is a wonderful group called Team of Voices, which I am a part of. A lovely group that likes to write poetry, discuss poetry, and all kinds of other fun activities. We were just listening to Alanis Morissette's Isn't It Ironic, which was released in February of 1996 from her studio album Jagged Little Pill. One of the things I really like about that song is all the little, you know, jabs and things that she puts in about life, how it can treat you well and then just turn on you, like the lovely rainy day. And, you know, being a free ride when you're already paid and all those little itsy-bitsy things that can happen to us. things we didn't think could happen to us. Kind of like the discussion we're going to have tonight about fate, free will, or tomfoolery. I will like to say one little thing about the Alanis Morissette song, Isn't It Ironic? There was a great debate about the song with a New York Times journalist who felt that her song had nothing to do with the word irony, because ironic is a state of affairs or event that seemed deliberately contrary to what was or might be expected. So he felt lyrics such as it's free ride when you're already paid or a traffic jam when you're already late are not ironic. Morissette said, for me, the great debate on whether I was saying an ironic was an ironic or wasn't a traumatic event. It was embracing the fact that once I was in a, sorry, I'd always embraced the fact that every once in a while I'd be the queen of saying things that weren't proper. And while I was writing it, we definitely were not doggedly making sure that everything was technically ironic. It was just lyrics. So sometimes people like to be the, what I like to call grammar police or the language police, when it's simply just creativity. However, you can make your own decisions on whether she's singing about things that are ironic or just being creatively, you know, license, using her creative license. But I've got a lot to talk about tonight. Fate, futures, and all those fun things that we've got going on. So welcome to Blog Talk Radio and Meet Discussions. I've got a lot of people already on the line, so we're going to go ahead and say hello to Pretty Bird. How are you doing, Pretty Bird?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've got crazy dogs behind me tonight, and I'm not sure why. They just keep yapping and yapping at me, but that's what they're doing. And then I've got Deb. Hello, Deb. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. I have to admit I was laughing when the song started and the dogs started to sing along. It was quite a duet.
Yeah, quite a duet. I'm telling you what, they are just, I don't know if it's the weather, we've got storms coming in. I have no idea what's going on with the animals tonight. And then I've got Wayne Jett joining us. Hello, Mr. Wayne. How are you tonight?
Hello, ladies. Lovely bunch of ladies there tonight. I'm glad to be here. Doing well.
Good. So we're going to start tonight asking, I want to ask each of you, if you believe in fate, if you believe in like fortune tellers, or if you believe it's all tomfoolery. So Wayne, what do you believe?
Oh man, I don't know what I believe. I don't believe that people are very psychic and can see the future very well, but I think I can, but I think anybody else can, so I don't know. I don't really believe the fortune tellers. I've been to them, and they tell me a lot of good stuff, but it never really came true. And so I don't know. I just don't know. I still go to them every once in a while, but I don't know if I believe them or not. I believe in fate. I believe in fate. I think one day I'll be an old man. It's fate.
That's what's going to happen. Deb, your thoughts on that?
Well, my thing is there's so many things possible, and like I have no doubt there's just as many out there faking it as there are that feel something. For example, many of us, myself included, are really empathic, and is that not really fate, but it's unknown. And as far as fate, if you believe in the butterfly effect, where you went back, if one tiniest flutter of a thing that changed could change everything, then you just changed fate. So was it ever fate to begin with? So I, on one hand, believe anything is possible, but on the other, believe that we could talk all night about the maybe this, maybe that, but that it's that damn fascinating. So, great topic choice.
Awesome. And Pretty Bird, your thoughts on it?
How much time you got, sweet?
Right?
Well, I got about 2 hours tonight.
Okay. Do I believe in fate? I do believe there are things that align with each other that are meant to align with each other. I also believe that people are hard-headed and they fight everything that's good for them until their path is 60 miles long when it should have really just been 2 blocks. So we change our time frame, we change our experiences, we change all of that. But if things are meant to be, at some point, they will happen in some way. Having said that, on the question of fortune tellers, I think that there's a lot of people that are really good at reading people's physical body language and tell them what they want to hear, or tell them close to what they want to hear, and then they ask for a moment for more money to make that happen. The thing is, when people, first of all, everybody can intuit things. Otherwise, the hairs wouldn't stand up on the back of the neck. You wouldn't get that foreboding feeling when something isn't quite right. So everybody can intuit things. Those that are a little bit more in tune with that, it's just part of their daily existence. You know, it's not fortune tellers like in the movies. While they do exist, they, you know, in whatever, you know, faction of truth or not, my experience with being able to see things or read people, not so much their language, but all the things that they hide, all of that, it's just kind of an innate thing. Most people probably don't even notice that they do it. It's just kind of how they see the world. It's what normal looks like to them. It depends. And if you change your foretold future by these fortune tellers, even if they are giving you tidbits and insight, you change it, whether it is a self-fulfilling prophecy, whether it's not something you want and you do things to change that. And every single choice we make changes our future, regardless of if you know what it is or not. So it's a big, giant puzzle. And the best thing that I have ever seen that kind of equates my thought on that is that movie with Jason Bourne, not Jason Bourne, dear goodness, Matt Damon, called what is it? It's something Bureau. Judgment. I'll have to look that up and get back to you, because now it's going to drive me nuts. But it's all about, they were meant to be in every other life together. And in this one, they saw each other for a second and they were supposed to be on different paths, but they kept on crossing when they're not supposed to. And they fought for that. And so is that then wrong? You know? So it makes perfect sense to me. I think whoever wrote that was just like, you and I can hang out. Adjustment Bureau. That's cool. The name of it.
Yes. Okay. I am kind of at odds with my beliefs because of an encounter I had just recently. Because I am very cynical that my free will is my free will, and people work hard to get where they're at. You're not fated in life. You've never been fated in life. You know, you work for what you get. And then a freaking heart problem changed my whole life. And no matter how hard I was going to work to get where I wanted in life, my heart said, we don't care how hard you work. We don't care what color you are. We don't care what money you make. We don't care anything. We just took that all away from you. Education didn't matter. Money I made didn't matter. Nothing mattered. You're going to live. You need this part. So was I fated for that? What triggered that? So that's one of the things that kind of changed my outlook in life, because I had a very focused, this is going to be your life, this is where you're going to be at 50, 40, 50, you know, everything had been at this thing, because I had no control when I was younger and people made decisions. I had taken control of my life up until that moment, and I lost all control. So that's one factor. So I kind of lost that. So now I'm like, maybe the universe has some input in my world. So that's kind of changed my belief in everything is in your control, which I used to believe. And so now I think bigger picture. So I believe things, like Deb was saying, there's kind of a butterfly effect where something may happen and you move forward. I also kind of believe in that every decision you make affects someone that you may not know. So if I walk in and I upset someone that I didn't know, like I cut someone off and I didn't even know I did it, or I do it deliberately because they made me mad. And I made that person so mad, he went home and he cussed out his wife, and that led to their divorce, and that led to their child being angry or something like that. We never know what our actions can do to another person. Or I helped someone with their groceries and told them they had to have a beautiful day, and that triggered them to forgive someone and better their relationship, and that relationship turned into something else. And you never know what a simple gesture, whether it be bad or good, can turn into. Because you could be angry at someone, and they can turn around and say, wow, that person was angry. I better go home and tell my partner I love them. So everything we do, I think, has that butterfly effect. So is that fate, or is that what are we doing? You know, I don't know, thinking about. So now that we have all that kind of crap in our head, I thought we would start with a little teeny tiny thing that I wrote today. So I'm going to throw that up. I wrote a brevity, if everybody wants to believe that. It's rare, but I did. So I'm going to throw that on the board. And we're going to start with my little brevity. And then we will go from there. So here it is. It is called Fate. Fresh soil covers the graves of free will. As fate pays 30 gold coins to the traitor, illusion. And poem.
Well, you may not do many brevities, but when you do, it sure does pack a wallop, doesn't it? Talk about food for thought. I'm loving the graves of free will. What a way to depict when you feel like your hands are tied and what you want has nothing to do with what is happening or what is impressed upon you by the universe. The traitor of illusions. I love that. I love that because reality, all reality is perception, and that changes with mood, that changes with nuance, that changes with information. It is a very fluid thing, and if reality is fluid, how real is it? And so I absolutely love that this is something to chew on. It'll linger, and that's fabulous. I mean, how many words is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. At least we know I can count to 18. That is a lot to stick in 18 words. That's fabulous.
Yeah, so you can count to 18.
So, Ms. Deborah Lee, what are your thoughts on fate?
I'm so sorry. I'm actually not even in the room at the moment. Can you skip me out and I'll write a comment later? I apologize and I'll be back within 10 minutes.
Absolutely. Wayne.
And Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes. It's a great little brevity. It was sweet. I think it's pretty deep too. I think with enough money, you can make fate happen to a certain degree. 30 gold coins goes a long way in making fate happen. It's a fulfilling fate. So with enough money, you can say, well, it's fate, but without the money, a lot of people don't get, their fate don't come true without the money to get to where they want to go. So it's kind of a, you know, you got to have certain things go your way to get where you want to go, and when the 30 gold coins come around, you can probably get fake, probably wake up, and then you get your fake each morning. That's the way I look at it. Money means a lot.
Thank you, Wayne.
You gotta
great
pay
coins.
The piper.
Yes,
and Rack and Toy, did you get a chance to hear it?
Oh, I heard you count to 18. I'm wondering if you've had to take your shoes off to do it.
How many toes do you think I got? Oh, hands and toes. We're good.
You're lucky you didn't go to 22. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. When you mention coins, there's if you want to get biblical and, you know, being the daughter of a reverend, I almost want to say it's implied. I can't help but think of the pieces of silver. So, you know, there's that wrapped up in there, even though you may not have intended it. But you, knowing you, you probably because you're sneaky like that. I mean, the whole piece is you know, like any brevity, there's room to figure out, you know, little things on your own, but it packs such a wallop.
It absolutely
Thank
does.
You.
So I have a question
of
for
course
you
I'm
about
sneaky like that. Yeah.
Okay. So since we are discussing faith, I have a real life scenario for you. Are you ready? Are you ready? Here it comes.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving from Florida to New York because my mother said, you're going with my friend Ada because she's not going to be stuck with her mother with nobody to talk to. So I said, all right. And so I drove, I rode in the car in the middle of this two-person's family business. We stopped at a gas station in North Carolina. I was 19 years old. I get out. I was going to go get a soda. I was going to go to the bathroom because they went in to get snacks. And I saw this guy. He worked there. He had come out. He was doing whatever. And I was just like, ooh, and I took two steps towards this guy, and she stopped me cold right in front of my face, and she's like, he's not for you. And we left. And don't you know, what is it, 20-some-odd years later, I met him online by some fluke of nature, and he absolutely remembers that day. So, A, people need not tell you what to do with your life because they can just suck it, and B, there's got to be something bigger at play for things to come full circle without even either one of us having any knowledge of anything, you know. And I knew that day when we drove away, I was sad, my heart was broken, I didn't even know who he was.
That's a small
well obviously
world.
He was not for you because you're married with four children.
Yeah, but I didn't get married until I was like 26. I'm 25, so he could have been for me for a while.
It could have been a different fork in the road.
Yeah, I agree. It could have been a different path in your life. But you're very memorable.
Yeah.
Why does he remember that day? Why do you remember that
why
day?
Why do
you remember that day?
It's like not for nothing. Wasn't my type. Not even a little bit. But it was a feeling in the air, and it stuck, and it was extremely painful, which drove me nuts because, you know, I'm very logical. I'm like, this makes no sense. This sucks. And because it made no sense, it had such a strong pull that it broke my heart. Crazy stuff. So, you know, this is where my theory of, you know, if it's supposed to happen, eventually – despite our stubborn twists and turns, things will kind of fall in line, even if they're a little different than they would have been earlier, you know?
How did you meet him online?
Facebook. Somebody neither one of us was very keen on started a group, and it was and made me a moderator, and it was like a word group. So because I'm a word nerd, they're like, hey, moderate this. And nobody had been on there in 3 days, so I started playing word games. I would throw up definitions and people would try to guess what word I'm talking about. And he is the only person that as soon as I clicked enter, he answered three times in a row. I said, forget it, it's your turn. And so that's how the conversation started.
How did you get to the point where you were talking about a gas station X number of years ago? That's where I want to get to that story. How did it get to
that? I don't know. I still know him. It's been 8 years. Like, so we just talk.
So wait. What she's saying is you bumped into him on Facebook. What, did he look at your profile and recognize
the
picture?
No.
It was you?
We didn't know. We didn't know until, I don't know, a few months into the conversation.
So right. how did you figure it out? What triggered that?
He was like, yeah, you know, yada, yada. When I was in North Carolina, I was like, I was in North Carolina once in the middle of nowhere by this car auction. He's like, yeah, I had a horse at a gas station over there. I was like, let me tell you. And I was like, with this, and this. He's like, yeah. He's like, and then he mentioned my outfit. And I was like, oh, well, hello there. How are you? So we meet again.
Wow. That's crazy.
A little bit.
Yeah. That's insane.
And you still have that outfit.
I wish I still had that outfit.
But I think there are moments in your life that you remember like that. I think that's crazy that you would meet up with him like that again.
Really.
I think that's... Yeah.
I was saying, is that you? And I said, yeah, it was me. And I think, oh, that's amazing. We talked with somebody that did be them. So for the past, so it's, I've done that before. I said, oh, that was you. And I said, oh, yeah. Said, uh-oh. Usually because I'm saying the wrong thing.
Was that you?
Life is interesting. And you know, and that made me think, by the way, because my brain never shuts off. That everybody has all of these lives, and we're all in different parts of the country and in different parts of the world and whatnot. So were we meant to have met again if it wasn't for this man-made electronic web of communication? Our paths never would have crossed. And is that the way it's supposed to have been? Or is it the other way around that because of this, we were finally able to fall in line, spiritually speaking. You know, it'll break your brain.
Damn you, Zuckerman.
But you don't know if you were not meant to meet again, because this is the way the universe works now. If it didn't work this way, the universe may have chosen a different route for you to work. So you don't know that.
But then that makes me wonder... the difference between technology and spirituality and what comes first. And is it because, you know, the powers that be make these things happen or give the people the things to do that, to fall that in line? Is it a grand design? I don't think it is. I can't imagine that the universe said, let there be Facebook. You know what I mean? It feels weird to me. But yeah, now that it's the norm, I can see that, you know, happening. But back when it wasn't, and this is, you know, a million years ago, back when everybody wasn't yet attached to their, you know, smartphones, back before smartphones were smartphones, you know what I mean? The world is such a different place. It's just, it's an interesting thing to ponder. And I'm not sure where I fall, on what side I fall, whether was it meant to be or not meant to be, as far as when it comes to certain things. Nowadays, oh, absolutely, the people that you meet are the people you're supposed to meet. But back when it was elusive and everybody wasn't connected and it was hit or miss, you know, there's a learning curve there, you know? So I don't know. Interesting stuff.
Okay.
So you've got my juices flowing.
Okay. So I'm gonna read a page out of the book that we were talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. From the bridge engine room and a dozen places on her deck, the 92 doors of her 19 watertight compartments could be closed in half of a minute by turning a lever. These doors would also close automatically in the presence of water. With 9 compartments flooded, the ship would still float, and as no known accident to sea could possibly fill this many, the steamship Titan was considered practically unsinkable. Built of steel throughout for the passenger traffic only, she carried no combustible cargo to threaten her destruction by fire. and immunity from the demand for cargo space had enabled her designers to discard the flat kettle bottom of cargo boats and give her the sharp, dead rise or slant from the keel of a steam yacht. And this improved her behavior and his seaway. She was 800 feet long, of 70,000 tons, displacement 75,000 horsepower, and on her trial trip, deemed a rate of 25 knots an hour over the bottom. Unsinkable, indestructible, she carried as few boats would satisfy the laws. These 24 number were securely covered and lashed down their chokes on the upper deck, and if launched, would hold 500 people. She carried no useless cumbersome life rafts, but because the law required it, each of these 300 berths in the passenger office and crew quarters contained a cork jacket, while about 20 circular life buoys were strung around the rails. Now, what boat would each of you think I was talking about?
The Titanic.
That's exactly what that sounds like.
It was a Titanic.
No. That is a fictional story written by Morgan Robinson 15 years before the Titanic ever set sail. Fate or succeeding the fictional story by a man where fate actually mirrored fiction. Word for word in a book written 15 years before the Titanic ever set sail.
I told you so.
I wonder if it's like, you know, Star Trek and their kind of flippy communicators and then the flip phones that morphed into smartphones and smartwatches, where the idea is amazing. And so somebody's like, I can do that. You know what I mean? So it would be interesting to have found out if the people who made the Titanic read that book.
Based on that story, yeah.
Here's the other key to this. This book was sent out to 50 publishers. All of them turned this man down. Only 50 of these books were printed because that's where the 50 copies were sent to individual publishers.
Wow.
One publisher said, get it down to 16 pages, I'll put it in my magazine. The book itself was never published until after the sinking of the Titanic. Nobody thought the book was any good. They thought it was a cheesy story. They thought it was nothing. So the book was never publicly released. And then when it was publicly released, their widows of people on the Titanic went after Morgan Robinson and said, why did you not warn us? So this is one of the great mysteries. So I'm going to start getting some poems on the board because it's 8:34, only read mine. So let's start with Wade. Wade, you got a poem for me?
Yes, I do. I wrote it just a while ago and I posted it on the topic board. You want
I
me to go
it.
Get it for you?
Okay.
Nope. I got it.
Trey Bird's already got it up there for us.
Yeah, this poem, you're talking about fiction and fate and fortune tellers, and so I put all of them mm-hmm. in my poem to get it out. You didn't throw it out. It's called I'm Glad This Poem Is Fiction, and it goes like this. Wanted to be wealthy. Couldn't wait. Had to have money. Was my fate. Saved a little money here, a little there. Every once in a while, I would share. Listen to all the fancy investment sellers. I wanted them better going to fortune tellers. Always run down from the nights of sleeplessness. Then decided to give up on all foolishness. First thing, get rid of this expensive sports car. Came home every night at a decent hour. Sometimes get up late, if I got up at all. Couldn't talk to me, I wouldn't answer the call. While my hair grew longer, kept devising new plans. I just wanted to be like Mike. I wanted to be the man. People would wave. I would look the other way. Kids would ask questions. I wouldn't say. Then one day it dawned on me. I figured it out. I could become rich, there was no doubt. I broke into the bank, got $2 million. It was going well. Now I don't have to worry. I have to spend 40 years in jail. Again?
Well, look at all the interest you can gain. As long as I didn't take your money.
Oh, yeah. Going well for a while.
This is great. And one day it dawned on me, I figured it out. I could become rich, there was no doubt. Broke into a bank, got $2 million, was going well. Now I don't have to worry. I have to spend 40 years in jail. Wow. I don't know, you might be, if you're, you know.
It was a good plan.
Maybe if you, maybe it was your first offense, you wouldn't have to spend exactly 40, but, you know. Maybe you could get free it down a little bit.
Literally,
well, that's what I would worry about. Wayne goes to jail, I don't know if he'd ever get out on good behavior, so we got to keep it before he goes in. We got to make that deal before he goes in. But I do love the rhyme on this. And I like your reference, I just want to be like Mike. I want to be the man. That's a great reference. I don't know, maybe I just love Michael Jordan, so. That's a great, great reference. Pretty Bird, what are your thoughts on that?
I love the way you tell a story. You know, I love that you know, you wanted to be wealthy and you saved some, you shared a little, you know, you made your investments, all of this stuff. It was running you down. You got rid of all of your cars. You got rid of all the stuff. You came home at a decent hour, you know, but then it sounds like depression. I wouldn't get up. If I did, it was going to be late. Don't talk to me. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to answer your questions. Leave me the hell alone and money. And now you don't have to worry about a roof over your head. So you get
it figured out.
Yeah. All my problems are gone. Three squares and a roof over my head.
But I knew the answers.
And Rock, your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm wondering what Wayne's gonna fashion into a prison shank. He tends to figure things out, and you know, it's wonderful to watch because you know you can almost see the wheels turning when he does it. He makes some quick left turns sometimes that you never know what to expect, but when he gets where he's going, you know he always you know ahead of schedule and under budget. So, you know, you do a good story, and you know, I probably unintentionally so, but you know, in the beginning, you're talking about, you know, you whatever you had, you know, you shared a little, you know, that's you know the idea that I get of you, you know, and your nature when I listen to you and I talk to you and everything, it felt you know very real and you know that's one of the things that makes it your storytelling so relatable. You know, people get a little fantastical or they base things on things that are like you know oh that's not you, you know I can't picture you doing that or whatever, but you know there's always that hint of you know that, yeah that's Wayne, you know and that's what came through in this. This was very much, you know, you at the same time as it was, you know, well, now you're going to jail. You know, I got bail money.
I got my money. I want my money.
I'll bail you out.
All right, cool. $2 million.
Oh. That's great.
And he mentioned fake like you did.
I know. Where did I go? Here am I. Okay, so I have. Oops, came over here. There I am. I have a couple of poems that I have to do from Deb's show last night. So.
Nope.
I don't know. I think Laughing Soul has a SoundCloud. So I'm going to throw that on the board right now. And
I got it.
With that, okay. And go ahead and play that one. so that we can get back to our conversation. So here we go with that poem.
Sufi and Shades of Bodhi, a poem by Laughing Soul. I, a speck of stardust, born of the same rhythmic raptures, twirling in blissful breaths to the cosmic chants. I bloom the thousands of suns within me, and with the Sufi and shades of every deific dawn, unfurls a petal of my benighted bodhi. Ashes of holy incense sanctify my aura, awakening my kundalini. Invoking Shakti by sadhana, bodhi attains nirvana. Bursts forth fountain of spirituality, pinwheel yogic ecstasies, and pirouettes my soul in mystic bliss.
Well, that is beautiful. I like the "I speak of stardust, twirling in blissful breaths." I think this is some beautiful lines in here. Sanctify my aurora, burst a forth fountain of spirituality. I think these are some pretty lines in here. And I think you did very well to the prompt and the picture. Wayne, what did you think?
Well, I said a lovely poem with a fantastic read. She is heavenly. She's heavenly in the read, and she just kind of gives me a drifting off into space, and it's great read it right to the prompt. And the prompt kind of reminds me of her, kind of has that, that mystical look to it, and like she's floating through space. And she's the one hell of a poet, and I love her to read. She's got a great voice. Great job with this.
Absolutely. And Raconteur, your thoughts?
Yeah, it was lovely. The imagery that she used, the stardust and the feeling of space, married well with the thought of, what was the last line that she mentioned? It was just, it kind of carried you away, and it had that almost ethereal feel to it. It was lovely.
And Pretty Bird, your thoughts?
Yeah. It's this kind of beautiful spiritual journey. It's the road to nirvana, basically. And it's gorgeous. The whole ashes of holy incense sanctify my aura, awakening my kundalini, invoking Shakti by sadhana, bodhi attends nirvana. And I love that. Because I put it on the board. I have been making my own incense, like my full-on recipes for all kinds of spiritual healing, full-on mortar and pestle, old school nonsense. I'm crazy. I'm so sorry. And so I love this journey with the meditation, with going to a higher state of enlightenment. And I think it speaks beautifully of the image itself that is celestial. So to take that to spiritual celestialism is quite lovely.
Absolutely. And I think that's it. Okay. I'm trying not to cough, guys. So let me finish. Sorry. Like I can do this. Let's see, who is the next one on that board? I love your comment, by the way. Ashes of holy incense. It's like I'm at Batman Comic Con.
Holy ashes, Batman.
Holy ashes, Batman. Preeper, do you want to read WSP's?
Sure.
All right, thank you.
And he is on the board.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And this is called Space Drake by WSP. And it goes like this. The Drake equation posits there are intelligent life forms in our galaxy. Humanity searches among the stars, hoping one day something calls back. I also look on with my telescope, twinkling specks across the void. I hope to see that hotline bling because I get lonely too. Sometimes I can make out a face, pewter, hexagonal head, violet, triangular nose, a Muppet mouth, Gonzo's lost relative. Our eyes meet, sharing this galactic moment, trying to stay nonchalant, straight-faced, like a male duck in water. Lilac blush on their left cheek betrays. Someday we'll find intergalactic connection, the space creatures, the scientists, and me. End poem.
That's awesome. I think, you know, someday we might find an intergalactic connection, the space creature, the scientist, and me. And this kind of, I know it's for Deb's night, but this kind of even fits into what we're talking about, you know, that whole, you know, force years and you know, fate and what's out there. And, you know, is it just us, or do we have someone out there kind of the whole, are we ants in a jar for someone? That's a whole other thing to get into with what we're talking about is someone just watching us. Are we who though? you know, does someone take our little jar and shake it up once in a while and go, oh, look what I did. Everybody's moved around. We just tossed up their whole world. You know, that's something, you know, we have all these major weather incidences or something, you know, is someone just flicking a switch on us and things just kind of go backwards for us. There are so many things to think about. It's literally is mind blowing. You know, it isn't like, who am I, but why the hell is it like this for me? I don't know. What is the question? What is the answer? It's very relevant. I really like this WSP. I thought it was pretty cool. Pretty Bird, your thought process on this.
If you click on the image link, it is an amazing picture of some galaxy somewhere. I don't even know what it is, but it's all these stars, and there are definitely faces in there. Like they're very humanoid voids in the gas and whatnot, that it just pulls the eye in all these directions. So what a wonderful daydreamy kind of thing to look through a telescope and imagine these faces and what that might be like to be chosen to meet and to think about a future where you know that kind of exists a little bit. But I had to chuckle just a wee bit with, you know, that Muppet mouth Gonzo's lost relative, because I kind of love that. You know, it makes it very relatable, very much, you know, this is this is what science says, and I look out into space and this is what I see, and it's much more sentient and much more emotive, you know, it's very relatable. And then at the end, you know, the space creature is a scientist, and then blah, blah, here's my telescope making first contact unbeknownst to anybody else. I love the idea of that. It's a fabulous fantasy story that, you know, it could happen because, you know, who the heck knows? And I love that. And it just speaks really well to what pulls out or what jumps out of that image.
Yeah. And looking at that, I mean, just his description of what a connection could become if we're adding, you know, a Muppet mouth, we're talking humor and love and just the male duck in water. That's fine. I just love, you know, everything about it. And weighing your thoughts on it.
Well, what I said is I'm sure there's intelligent life forms out there somewhere. It sure is not here. We observed time a long time ago when we look out in space, and there's no way to know if life was ever developed. How would you know what happened 3 billion years from now? It's kind of hard to meet a civilization that you're looking so far back in time to see. But when we do find the life forms, it'd be extremely a lot older, because we're looking back millions of years. Somebody's got to develop, and we got to still be existing at the same time. Because a lot of places would be, if you look back, if it was intelligent, it'd be probably destroyed by the time we get there to look at it and check them out. So It's going to be hard to talk to somebody in space that's intelligent, but I can't wait.
Absolutely. And Raconteur.
I can wait. No. The Muppet thing caught me, too, because, it's whimsical, and my mind tends to work a little that way. But, like you were mentioning earlier about the Titanic and how some things, tend to turn out to be true. It would be ironic, I guess, is the only word I could come up with. Who knows what they would be like. So to imagine them like something that's already out there that we've seen and dealt with in terms of, that, it's an interesting way to make it relatable, no matter how far off it is. But, the universe is so crazy, wide, expansive, however you want to put it. Odds are, at some point, maybe it does hit the nail on the head. Who the hell knows? So in terms of actual possibility even, it kind of speaks to me a little bit. But, that's because my mind is crazy. So I enjoyed it for that.
Absolutely. And let's see. I think we have one more. And that's going to be Crystal.
I've got her.
Thank Crystal. Yeah. I will read Crystal. Okay. This is Aerospace. Starlight shutters blink at the stained glass window, peeking through broken cracks of moon glow. A whisper of golden dust crushed around orbits, dancing pirouettes on crowns of galaxies. Lanterns beam around rainbow chrome, blazing over planets and crafted galactic homes. An explosion of colors painting pastel rings, coral, granite, and silver quartz green. Cloud clusters crumble to the crafted chase, carrying the palette of cosmos and aerospace. End poem. Oh, wow, I really like the cadence and the rhyme. Perfection. And I like the two stanzas, and I really like the colors. I it was vibrant and kind of deep with really great energy through it. You definitely felt, just like, like fireworks around the home. Like, no matter where you went, there was this burst of fireworks that you lived in or were a part of. And I thought that was kind of spectacular. Great job, Crystal. Wayne, your thoughts?
I think this is a lovely poem. She knows the picture well. If you kind of look at it, she's reading it, kind of just fits right in well. I love the line, cloud clusters crumble to the crafted chase. It's alliterative, and I like the alliterative lines, and that's a perfect one right there. She did good with this poem, and it's got good rhyme to it, good flow, and she did a great job with the picture. I love it.
And Raconteur.
Yeah, I think there's a hint of romance to this, and, that kind of goes hand in hand with the celestial, out of this world type feeling, I think. It just had that kind of feeling to it that wants to carry you away. And, I like, what you mentioned too. It's, for outer space, you kind of think black and white is not that much color or whatever, but she brought a lot of color to this and movement even. So it was a really good piece of that.
Okay, first of all, I love the image. I love that it looks like the end of Flashdance, the original one, where all the confetti and whatnot. That's just what it looks like to me. So it's got that kind of vibe, but it's a little mystical. And not only did she catch the vibrancy when her poesy kind of paints you in a mood of color, not just the galactic metallic, but when she's like, the cloud clusters crumble to the crafted chase, carrying the pallet of cosmos and aerospace, it's like but a fleeting moment, because these little pockets of gas dissipate, and it'll never look that way again. And so it's gone to move on to the next time, and for somebody else to look at or experience or whatnot, carried off in the vast universe. And so it's a little wistful, but it's this beautiful moment that we were able to experience, and she captured it wonderfully.
I agree. Absolutely. All right. I think the next poem now let's go back to our stuff is going to be, I think Stephen's poem is going to be pretty interesting. His comment to me is that it would seem to me that Morgan Robinson had a vision. I often have visions when I close my eyes. This is one I just had last night. So he's not able to call, but he included the recording. But I think this is interesting because his poem is about a vision that he had. So I'm kind of curious as to what this is going to be. So we are going to throw Stephen on the board and listen to his SoundCloud.
He's up.
All right, here we go.
Why Would a Torso Cross the Road by Stephen 76. As I drag myself from the serried tarred stone, ripping flesh at abdomen, leaving legs beneath the hot surface, dragging torso across the damp double yellow line, bleeding black blood, frying fingertips, floundering, only to be trampled by 9 retreads of the tractor-trailer driver's side tires, embedding my voice into the fresh asphalt. End poem.
Wow. Now that's a vision. So do we go to the psychic? This is what your vision means. This is what your dreams mean. Is he foreseeing something? God, I hope not. I really hope not. Did he foresee something happening to someone else? Well, if that's true, this could happen to anyone. Many people, unfortunately, are killed via car accident. They are killed being hit by cars. I mean, to say that would be coincidental, would be something happened to people, you know, maybe somewhere in the world this has happened to someone. So did he foresee it? Did it just happen? Is he having a bad day? Did he eat a bad mushroom? I don't know. That is something he saw behind his eyes. I mean, this is a vision. It's a very bad vision. Embedding my voice into the fresh asphalt. That's one hell of a line. You should think about that. Just your last scream into the asphalt, your last word, whatever it may be, is embedded forever into that asphalt. This is, for me, this is just stunning work. This is, you know, bleeding black blood. I mean, this is someone who's been hurt, someone who's been injured. Is that the essence of someone descending it to Stephen? Did he foresee it? Is it it's someone that he passed by that day, or someone embedded it into him for some reason? So they gave it to him. These are things that go through my sick little brain. Pretty Bird, your thoughts on Stephen's vision?
I have many. This reads to me like a lucid dream, and while all of us, you know, at one time or another have dreams that feel very real, lucid dreaming is you might as well just be living it right there in real time, in real life, with real bodily, like, heart races and anxiety and sweats and all that stuff. And that's what this feels like to me, which is kind of nightmarish and very, very stinking scary. Because, okay, half of his body is gone at the waist, and he's crawling himself across those double yellow lines, looking for help, trying to survive just to get squashed by the truck. That is vivid, and it's written in such this wonderfully easy language, and that's not to say that it's easy to be this vivid. It's just very understandable. It doesn't lose any flow. It captures you, and you move on. I mean, from the word the torso, because why would a torso cross the road? I mean, that's an odd thing to imagine. So when he goes full in, dragging himself, ripping at the flesh, it captures you like fully. And so when he's silenced that way, it's almost like at the end of a movie with no score, where it just kind of lingers and nobody moves for a minute because you don't know if that's actually the end, you know? But so I absolutely love the brilliance of this. It's kind of like when you catch a movie at the very end and saying that's like the best scene of the whole movie, and it makes you want to watch the movie. I want to know how he got cut in half, you know? And so I don't know from visions or dreams or whatnot, but I know that this was wonderfully engaging, and I love his mind. I absolutely love his mind. I remember I had when I was picking for the front page on All Poetry, I picked one of his that tickled me and all of its morbidity with people in boxes under beds, and I was just like, aha, brilliant. Because I'm a wee bit twisted, but it's okay. So I love the vividity of this piece. That is a word, right? My brain is not working.
I don't know.
You still with us, Sweet?
Sweet.
Are you muted, my love?
Should we go to commercial?
Yes, I'm muted. I'm muted. I'm sorry. Rocky tore your thoughts.
Oh, my mind just went blank. I was wondering about what happened to Sweepy. I'm sorry.
Oh, my phone locked and I was muted. I'd unlock the phone, get back to where I was, unmute the phone.
Yeah.
In here.
Welcome back. And now this word from our sponsor.
How come it?
Well, your thoughts on the poem?
Did we
Wayne?
Come in? Yes, how come it?
Yes.
I said, Steven, it's quite the ride. I still don't know why the torso would cross the damn yellow line. Looks like you went to pieces when you wrote this. I don't know why he crossed it, but I know he made a bad decision crossing. So you went to pieces when you wrote this. Fingertips floundering. It's alliterative and bloody. Yum. Great job. I love this poem.
He went to pieces.
Yeah,
yum. Oh, my goodness, Wayne.
That's awesome. Oh, good Lord. All right, Pretty Verse, time for you to entertain us.
Well, all right, so I'm going to take this sideways. Here we go.
Wiggle, wiggle.
Okay, this is In Dreams and Nightmares, the Shadow People. And it goes like this. In shadows they live. On the other side of sunshine, in a corner of the eye, just this side of vision, insanity on the cusp of reality, truth in duality of time. In echoes they speak, mumbles behind everything, calling out a name underneath the traffic noise, whispering in words a thought can hear, eradicating silence. In the very air they hang, a change in scent on a breeze, the stink of someone else's memory, a grating plea for a void of existence to the keeper of dreams and nightmares as the coin flips before the call. And poem.
Wow. I love In Dreams and Nightmares. I love shadows. I love shadow people. A change in scent on the breeze, the stink of someone else's memory. I love the why, the stink of someone else's memory. I the idea that I just the perception that you can be in the same situation, same thing, and someone can tell you that's not the way it happened. That's not the way it happened. That's not the way it happened. And you're like, what the hell are you talking about? Who were you there? Were you in the same place I was at the same time? Because that's exactly not the way it happened. What? I don't even understand that. But I love that line. And the other one is whispering words a thought can hear. Whispering words a thought can hear. How do you know what I'm thinking? How do you even... But somehow you can feel that. You can grasp it, even though they never say a word. These people, these dreams, these nightmares, and yet they're in there, and they're talking, and you're like, just stop. I don't want to hear what you have to say. But, yeah, to think of someone else's memory and the whispering words of thought, these are just stunning, and they're scary. They're scary because there's a touch, a taste, the taste, that bitter taste of reality, that metallic blood taste that kind of just you swallow, and yet there's nothing that's bleeding, but you can feel it. Well done.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. Wayne, your thoughts on that?
Well, I used to hear about shadow people when I used to late-night radio back a few years back, and they talked about them quite regular, and wasn't long until a few of them moved in with me. They're still here, but we don't talk much. My cat loves them. one performance brought back some crazy night. It was 1-0. Thanks for
that. Oh, my.
And Rackin' Sure.
Yeah, the idea of shadow people is really cool. That feeling of being watched, it kind of combines with that for me. To describe it, you know, when you talk about this think of something, that's a lovely word choice because, you know, the meaning of that word, it's got, you know, more than one thought attached to it, you know. This think of something, that there's the visceral thing of it, but there's also, you know, just the wrongness of it. And you know, that wormed its way in there too for me. So, you know, with all the twisting in this, it's really beautiful.
I appreciate that. So if y'all ever want to know what it's like to actually see the things, it's like that.
What is it like to see a naked midget running around your house?
I was just going to say, and I hear
the most annoying thing on the planet. Of all of the possible things that can come visit me or that have come visit me, I can tell you some scary stories. But generally speaking, things are benign. But this little impish little naked man is not okay.
I picture Family Guy, picture Pete running through the house going, hey.
He'll laugh. He reminds me of a mix between Peter Dinklage and Wee Man. He's got the dark hair and he's full butt ass naked and just run, like no shoes or nothing, like just naked as a daybird, just 2 o'clock in the morning running around like you know. And it used to drive hubby crazy because we always had a house I have 4 kids, so we have, you know, he would go and be like, which one of them's up, ready to shove little butts back in bed? And they're all asleep, and there's this little naked midget running around the house. And he's like, can you just tell him to stop? I'm like, yeah, my midget. You're not bothering me none. You know. The things we get used to.
Well, you know.
Did you claim him on you as dependent on last year's taxes?
I don't claim him at all.
You should, by now.
My fear is that if I acknowledge him, he's going to then, you know, dance it for me or something god-awful because, like I said, impish. Like, if I look, he will show me. No, thank you.
Enough.
No, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you at all. All right. So I have another stated poem, odd but true. about following ghosts and what we think we should do and what we're told to do and what everyone says, this is the way life should be. It's a little odd, a little off, but I was thinking maybe I should do it, maybe I shouldn't. But I think it's more about what you're told and how to grow up and what, quote unquote, life should be, what fate tells you to do. And I think that we all fall into that, you know, this is your life, this is a life plan, this is, quote unquote, normal. And so this was my second, this is fate, and this is the path, and this is what every little girl should be, and this is what you want, which is the white picket fence world. So this is, dare not follow the ghost of a white picket fence. Devils and banshees scream obscenities. Dare not follow the ghost of a white picket fence. As dragon talions rip old scars on flesh. A firestorm of red and orange blaze, melting the edges of insecurities. Frozen layers of self-abuse. With open arms and mind, soft words and warm body, the sinner without tie. Pretenders and fools played games as yesterdays became tomorrows. Nights grew long as days grew longer. Besotted by ideals of romance, betrayed by Shakespeare's romantic pen. She wept, but bodies sleep in distant minds. The shine has faded from the gold, and it's warmer outside the door. The clock and the walls tick-tock, time to go. Devils and banshees scream obscenities. Dare not follow the ghost of a white picket fence. As dragon talons ripped old scars on flesh. And Paul.
I do love how you bookended this because it kind of closes it out with, as strong as the opening. I love that dragon, as dragon talons ripped old scars on flesh. And here's the thing. We are taught to be, and I'm finger quoting normal, whatever the societal norm is for the time, you know, polite and, you know, good girls this and yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And that leaves very little room to actually grow and be who you're going to be. And it's a painful process because should is a word that should not exist. Because there's no should. What's with the should? You do or you don't. You want to, you don't want to, but there is no should. That's somebody else's expectations. And the problem with that is every choice we make for ourselves, we let somebody down every single time. So it weighs different because parents do this blindly. Like they don't even notice. We all want the best for our kids. So we have all of these grand things. And as they make their choices, we have to allow ourselves to morph and mourn the death of our dreams for our children and then be elated for their own choices and watching them become who they are. But it's a painful process, especially if you're grown and you need to fight for a semblance of something that feels real because this can't be my life. This can't be all that there is. This can't be it. And it takes strength and bravery to claw your way out of that because it's all self-doubt. It's everybody saying, you can't do this. This makes you a bad person, but you don't feel like a bad person in a bad situation. And so I absolutely love the way you pull us through all of that with the ideals of romance and betrayed by Shakespeare's romantic pen. You know, Shakespeare was a dirty old man, I'm just saying. Well, maybe not that old. He was quite naughty. And she wept, but bodies sleep in distant minds. And that says so much to me because you're the one who's suffering in everybody else's ideals. You're the one who's suffering in this suffocating, you know, shrink-wrapped existence that everybody else puts you in, you know? And it looks nice on paper, but not everybody fits that same size mold. And it's a painful process, and I think this is fabulous.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And Raconteur, what are your thoughts about that picket fence?
Why do you do that to me? it sends my mind reeling. It's hard for me to comment right now. My head, I'm losing focus.
All right.
No worries.
Sorry, Rob.
And, you know, you just drive them to distraction, woman. And Wayne.
I guess.
What are your thoughts?
I got to know right now. Do you love me? Will you love me forever? Do you need me? Oh, yeah, that's a great poem. I like this poem a whole lot. And I like to stand. The pretenders and fools play games as yesterday become tomorrow's. Nights grew longer as days grew longer. That's a great stanza. And I think in the AN where he's talking, he was right there with this meatloaf, so I had to sing a little meatloaf real quick. But it's a great, great poem. I'm doing a whole lot. Great job.
Oh, the earworm, Wayne. Thank you.
Yeah. That'll be in forever.
She prefers frogs.
All right. She prefers frogs. I think we have one more poem. Actually, we have two. We have one from Frank, which we'll play, and then I have a second one from Miss Nell.
So I'm grabbing Frank.
Oh.
Sounds like I'm going to go eat hot dogs. It just sounded weird.
I'm going to grab Frank.
Have a Frank.
If you want to be frank with me, I prefer you were just Rack with me. All right, here we go with Franklin.
A thousand injuries of Fortunato I have borne as I best could. For when you ventured upon insult, I vowed revenge. You so well know the nature of my soul, or not suppose, however, when I gave utterance to a threat, at length I would be avenged. This was a point definitely settled, but the very definitiveness with which it was resolved precluded the idea of risk. I must not only punish, but punish with impunity. A wrong is unredressed when retribution overtakes its redresser. And is equally unredressed when the avenger fails to make himself felt as such to him who has done the wrong. My sin, you ask, was listening to the voice of my profligacy. That is on the account of that fatal admission then disclosed. I must bear the bitter burden of my indiscretion exposed to all, haunted by the dreadful face of my perversion in poor victim. Fortunato was a pompous connoisseur of wine tasting, who had attempted to beguile me with his false bravura, and mocked and dared to insult my intelligence with wit, that I would in the end take my revenge over sweet taste. I invited him to a rare vintage of Amontillado in the wine cellar, where he could discern his palate and the privacy of a stately palazzo, and into the dampness of a steep tenebris catacombs we entered, the mouth of the snake's fangs embedded as a motto above, Nemo me impune lacessit, no one provokes me with impunity. We advanced more into the recesses of the catacombs, where lied a brick and mortar hidden by hoary bones stacked, a walled-up niche that was the forgotten burial of Fortunato, who would be entombed alive, to never be seen until 50 years later. In my head, I can still hear his last words uttered with heightened awe. For the love of God, Montresor! Yes, for the love of God. heart. May you rest in peace. Perhaps I am a madman or a prisoner of my fate, like a poor Fortunato.
Well, of course, we end with that lovely laugh that we can never, ever get over. Yes, for the love of God, and that's the way he is. And, of course, I don't know who's going to rest in peace with that laugh there, Frank. Again, this is another great story by Frank. He's got, you know, all of the things that scare the crap out of everybody, you know, hidden by hoary bones, stacked, walled up niche that was. Who would be entombed alive to never be seen until 50 years later. There's so many great lines in here. Vowy revenge, fatal admission then disclosed. I love, I must bear the bitter burden of, which I'm sure Wayne is upset because he likes the alliterations on there. My revenge with sweet taste. Always love those great lines that you put in there. Where lied a brick and mortar. Really great poem. Really enjoyed it, Frank. Was it his fate? Was it he put there? You know, was it planned by God himself? Well done. Wayne, your thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah. I miss Frank's poems. It's one person I heard in a while. I heard this before. This is a great poem. I'm glad he don't listen to me, because if he listened to me, he may turn on me, too. So it'd be he gets sweet revenge in this poem. It's a great job. And all it is kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat all the way through. He did a wonderful job on this. I enjoyed that. And I'm glad to get to hear his voice again. I hadn't heard it for about 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Great job.
And Pretty Bird, your thoughts?
Well, I kind of love the retelling of the Pope piece. I think he did a great job. I am loving this Fortunato with a pompous kind of sort of wine tasting, because my mind is all Bacchus / Dionysus / you know, talk about putting a kink in the works. You know, makes everybody do all the bad things. You know, I'm like, is that then faith? Is that what temptation is? With here's all the good things, all the pleasurable things. Like, here, have some wine. Let's see where that takes you. You know, it impedes your future or you know, not. I guess it depends on who you are and what you're drinking. But I kind of really love that. And that whole hidden by hoary bones. Okay. Now, it's a word that I've seen him use many times, H-O-A-R-Y. But I'm loving that it's hoary, because if you don't know that that's a word, because it's kind of an archaic word, then it's just hoary bones, like the unfortunate other hoary. And it just cracks me up. But I do love that word. And for the love of God, may he rest in peace. I kind of love that. That's just, you know, you know, that's just a very relatable sentiment, whether it is, yes, for the love of God in a true reverent sense, or the way we tend to say it now in exasperation of all the things. So, yes, and that laugh does linger. So that was a fun lesson.
So thank you, Frank, for bringing that to my show. I always appreciate it. All right. Pretty Bird, put up your second one.
Forgot I had one. This one I like, because as far as things on your list, you had mentioned things that make your hair stand on the back of your neck and stand on end. And I was just like, ooh, I have one of those. I do. So I brought it. I mean, it's not so much fate or this, that, or the other, but it does do that. So this is called Company Unseen, and it goes like this. If I can read it, because my eyes are going, it's late and I'm old. Okay. The shadows had a voice that evening. Footsteps, a night air followed close enough to bristle hair and warm breath. Then, silence. Singing away the chill down my spine, walking faster to whatever lyrics popped in mine. Still, the louder I sang, the more vociferous the noise. contemplating waiting beneath the aura of every street lamp, but slowing down felt too close and running felt too insane, so I like big butts and I cannot lie. Stepping to the brisk beat, I could almost believe it was an easy stroll, but there was nothing easy about claustrophobic outdoors. Each growl of passing cars, every rush of wind carried with it another spirit, more footsteps never quite in time with my own. Home at last, doors locked, lights on, I sat in the armchair waiting for it to feel quiet, but the air felt tight around my skin, tighter with every breath, louder with each heartbeat. Shadows changed shape and stagnant light and windows offered no solace. Oh, Lord, my God, when I and I... And they moved again in a low hum that may have been my refrigerator, but sounded like... The voices stopped individual chatter and moved as one in too close a proximity for me to move without feeling them, whatever they are, them, the shadows, the voices, the air itself. But if it's on the air or in it, then every breath taints me, filling me with more fear. And the eyes that I see in my head look at me with my eyes open. I sat motionless, awaiting dawn, and I wondered what would become of tonight, but it's every night, and the sun is too far away to steal my trepidation. And poem.
Brilliance. Absolute brilliance.
It's the big butts that did it, isn't it?
It is. I love that song. It's the big butts. No, I think it's the, someone's following you or walking with you or doing something like that, and it just totally freaks you out. I think that's what it is.
Well, because it happens, and it's the oddest thing in that, you know, if you've got one person that is following you at a distance, that's some scary stuff. But when there's nobody, it's all the fear and all the nothing, and there's nothing to contain that in, especially when you feel it on your skin and you feel it at the nape of your neck and you feel it in the goosebumps and you know that it's not a nothing, you know? I mean, there's times where you're just like, I just need to get home because no chances. And then there are times where it's a very real fear, you know?
Right. That's just the scariest of all. I hate that feeling, and we all know that feeling. We all get that feeling. It's insane.
And then when the sun rises, you feel like you were crazy.
Yeah, you do. But you know you're not, because we've all had that feeling, and you know it's there. Weigh your thoughts.
I said a pretty bird, you're crazy as I am. You're more poetic. I found it very humorous, and I see nobody all the time. What? Who's there? I got to go.
I see nobody all the time. Oh my goodness, Wayne, you crack me up.
What?
That is
I
awesome.
See nobody all the time. I like that. I see nobody all the time. Oh, great stuff. So I want to ask you both, do you think that the guy that wrote The Sinking of the Titan, because this book fascinates me, saw or foresaw a vision, or it's just coincidence?
I don't know. I bet you that if I read the book, I could tell you, though, because things kind
of
work that way.
I do.
Yeah, but
I'm reading the book,
which is awesome. Here's the thing.
Right.
If the boats of the time, and this is just my logic, you know, bear with me, tell me I'm full of crap, it's fine. If the boats of the time were all a certain size, and so you're thinking bigger than all that will put you at a semi-round number, and you're thinking all of this stuff and what would actually happen, because he had experience. His father was in the industry, right? So he had some kind of experience.
Right.
So he would know, like, you know, that this doesn't exist, so let's make it that. And even down the road, they're like, well, we have to make it the biggest. So at that point, it'll be similar, just logically speaking. However, the way – and again, if you design it to be veritably unsinkable, which I guess was the goal of all the ships, but they finally, you know what I mean? You want it not to be, you want it to be more than seaworthy, you know? And so maybe there's a little logic to the timeline of the industry as far as improvements and, you know, Titanic 2.0. But as far as how it sank and the fact that it sank on its maiden voyage and all of that, yeah, it seems a little foreshadowing. And so you have to wonder, none of that can be calculated. None of that was on purpose. None of that could actually have been known. And it was such an unlikely thing to happen that, yeah, it makes you wonder. So while technically I think that there's just a certain amount of industry growth that's the next step up, you know, as far as the events of that maiden voyage, no, that's eerily similar.
Right.
I think if you're going to write an epic poem or an epic story, you want to write something that's impossible to happen, something that's bigger than life, that was brought down, like the unsinkable ship. Or something like that. If I could write a book, I'd write something about an unsinkable ship that sunk and would get everybody's attention. So you might have just done it for, and it came out with a close word or something, but it's a good topic to write to. So I think I can see where you switch your topic and not make it sound like it already it happened. So I can see where you just guessed at it. It's coincidence.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. And then you have to wonder how much hubris and the ship designers in real life for the Titanic and whatnot with the, well, it can't ship, it can't sink. What is the likelihood of this? But if there is a possibility, that should have been addressed. But the ego of that it's never happened, it will never happen, you know, may have sealed their own fate, you know, since they didn't make plan
right.
Bs or addendums. So... But it is eerily similar, and that's it's enough to be like, you know?
Yep.
That's true.
Yeah, I was perfectly fascinated when I was reading your topic. I was like, ooh, tell me more. I need a popcorn for all the bullet points. I was like fully engaged.
I know.
It was awesome.
Me too. I was like, this is crazy. This is insane. All right, guys. Well, I think that's the show then.
Well, let me plug mine if you don't mind.
I was getting to that. I
always
have
do
show.
That to you. Let me just shut my mouth. I love you.
I love you too. I know we definitely have a show coming up for Miss Pretty Bird, which I do love your topic. So can you tell me all about it?
Absolutely. This week on What the Flock, it's Forget You. Here's the thing, because it's easy enough to forgive somebody, you know, but I can't really forget. I can't forget the good. I can't forget the bad, you know. So how do you move on and heal from the damage of broken trust or broken love? And is it easier for you to forget the pain or forget the person? And here's the kicker, is it really forgiveness? If you can't forget, I mean, if it still hurts, are they really forgiven? I mean, things to
great
ponder.
Topic.
So, thank you. So that is what is on for Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Thursday 10 p.m. Got you.
Hope to see you there.
Wow.
Did you say good night? He did, and he dropped.
I did not yet.
Good night, Wayne.
But Wayne did. Good night, Wayne. Cool. Good night, Wayne. Well, good night, Pretty Bird. Thanks for being on my show. Good night. And, you know, Mr. Dev, or Mr. Dev, Mr. Racontor and Dev and everybody that was here. I appreciate it. And thanks for hanging out with me, Pretty Bird.
Oh, it's a fabulous topic. I can talk about this stuff forever and ever and ever. I wanted to, if you don't mind, just mention Saturday's show on the Think Tank with AP and Deb and Hatter, that the prompt is keyed, wherever that takes you, keys, any kind of keys. And
Yeah, and you know, there's things to be locked and unlocked, and all kinds of different meanings of the word key. So I actually have one up there already because it spoke to me. So I wanted to plug that, and Wayne says, "Great show, sweet," and it absolutely was such a fascinating topic. I love how generally you and I are the queens of no F's given, and this week you gave all the F's.
Yeah, I know.
Fate and fiction, fortune tellers and foolishness. I was like, that's a lot of F sweet. You know, I'm not used to it.
Well, you know. What can I tell you? I like it. That's the way I am.
But it was awesome. Absolutely,
I can't help
awesome.
It.
It's just such an interesting topic, all of it, because it's all, again, reality or truth or how we feel about a topic like that is very much mood related, very much situational, very, very, very fluid.
Right.
It's very hard to want to believe, as normal human beings in this day and age, to want to believe that we can't control everything. But the truth
is because I definitely want to control everything.
Oh, me too. I need a semblance of control. I mean, I know that I have none, but I need a semblance of control for my own sanity, you know? Otherwise, I feel like I'm floating in space. But if you look at all the moments of your life, and I'm hoping it's the same for anybody, or I'm just a freak. Either way, I'm good. All those moments, all those memorable, magical moments were nothing that you controlled. These are just these things that happen, all these wonderful moments or sad moments or moments that define you or change you or make you see the truth in somebody. These are all things that happen outside of ourselves. And because of that, how much control do we actually have? The only control that I know that I have is how I react to things. And I'm a hot-headed, so sometimes I don't even have that. But it's a beautiful notion that all of the best things in life, we can't calculate, and they're just magic and beautiful, you know?
Yeah, I know, because you can't. And that's what I find interesting about the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, we can construct our own pain, though.
And that's the truth.
I wonder why it's like that. I wonder why all the good things are outside of us and all the bad things are at our own hand. Even if they aren't, it's very easy to feel like they are. And it's like we are the masters of our own, you know, unfortunateness and not of our own joy. And I don't know if that's just perception or reality. To me, that's just the way life is, and that's what reality looks like to me, you know. But how much of that is just how it seems, you know? Such that they, okay, listen, you're going to, my brain is breaking because I can think of all the things.
Me too. All right, sweetie. I will chat with you later and maybe we'll do another show on this. I love your topic
good.
And I actually will be there. I will be there Thursday night. So
awesome.
We will chat again. I know.
Yes,
I'll be there Thursday night. All right, honey. Thank you for being on my show. I will chat with you later.
Hope
things are better. And I'll... All right, hon. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good night. Bye.
Bye.